ॐ भद्रं हरणे पश्यनुयामदेवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभेर्यजत्राः स्थिरायरङ्गैस्तुष्टिवागुंसस्तनुभिः यशेम देवहितन्यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नःस्तूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तारक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्ददाति ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So we're on in Mandukya chapter 3, the Advaita Prakarana, verse 44. Laye sambodhaye chittam Laye sambodhayet chittam vikshiptam shamayet punaha vikshiptam shamayet punaha sakashayam vijaniyat
sakashayam vijaniyat.
I did that wrong. Sakashayam vijaniyat sakashayam vijaniyat samapraptam nachaliyet samapraptam nachaliyate laye sambodhiyate chittam vikshiptam samayate punaha sakashayam vijaniyat samapraptam nachaliyate. Remember that Gaudapada has given now, having done so much unfoldment of the whole vision of Vedanta, he's talking about two major upayas, or the two upayas, the two means that are necessary really for gaining nishta, or clarity in this knowledge. One upaya is vairagya, that dispassion. The other upaya, vairagya brings about the antakarana shuddhi. The other one is the for jnanam itself, or knowledge itself, is shravana manana nididhyasana. Shravana means that exposing yourself to the teaching methodology. Manana means really using your mind to bring up any doubts as to why what the Upanishads are unfolding might not be true. The shravana, when you're doing the shravana, the teacher is unfolding the vision of the Upanishads for you, and you can ask all kinds of questions at that time in order to gain clarity. But these questions are in order to gain clarity and depth about what the Vedanta is actually, what the Upanishads are actually saying, so that you actually can see what they are saying. So that there's those types of questions. That's all part of shravana, where you're listening to understand, and the questions are geared toward your understanding the vision of the Vedanta. But manana, the manana is where you're questioning the vision itself. Like, why would that be true? I understand this is what Vedanta is saying, but why couldn't it be like this? Or why couldn't it be like that? Why does it have to be this? What is this vision that the Vedanta is revealing, is teaching? Why couldn't it be otherwise? That's manana. So your mind has to be engaged, you know?
She doesn't lose.
Oh, okay. Oh, don't worry. She has so many.
Just go on.
It's okay, Tibby. Tibby, it's okay.
I know.
No, no, no. Just let her be for a while. We'll see. Peter will take care of her. Still, let her be. Yeah, I know. I know.
So many obstructions.
Wait till we have pigs and cows and, and chickens. I want lots of chickens.
She never wanted dogs.
Oh yeah, dogs, because they create a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The disturbance.
Oh yeah, the disturbance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we love Tibby.
All right, let's go. Okay. When we say, so upaya, there's two upayas. One is for the antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind. And he really encapsulates that with vairagya, the dispassion. But the other is the teaching methodology itself, shravana manana. Manana means engaging your mind so that it sees that actually it can't be anything else. It can't be another way. And it has to utilize in that inquiry, it has to utilize the means of knowledge you have available, you know, to know what you know. Otherwise, why couldn't it just be this imagination that I have? No. Knowledge is knowledge. You have to have a means of knowledge. And then, not only that, it's not just the means of knowledge, you know, but having understood the means of knowledge that are involved, also logic. It has to withstand your logic, your logical inquiry. You have to be grounded in the means of knowledge that you use, but it has to withstand your knowledge, and it has to withstand your experience. You know, your experience. What the Vedanta is unfolding, what the Upanishad is unfolding, should jive with your life experience, inner and outer. You know, and so, if you have questions, you know, in terms of the means of knowledge, in logically, why couldn't it be like this? What means of knowledge are being used, you know? And what about this experience? And what about this experience? All of it has to make sense to you, and your mind has to be free and available to question. That's manana. Okay? Remember, shravana is, the questioning is different. In shravana, you're questioning to understand what the Vedanta, what the Upanishads are saying. In manana, you're questioning to say, why is this true? Why couldn't it be like this? And so that really covers the bases. Your mind has to be brave and free and willing to inquire for the sake of the truth. It's a beautiful thing, really. The other one, the third one of this upaya for gaining self-knowledge is nididhyasana. And that's what Gaudapada is focusing on. Now, in this upaya, the shravana and the manana have been done really pretty thoroughly. There's been a lot of shravana, a lot of manana. But now the mind has to own it up. And he realizes that the mind has many, many habits, you know. The mind is used to going out. The mind is used to living in a dual world where I'm the subject, you're the object. Where there's things for me to achieve in order to become whole and complete. That's what we are as human beings. We're born as this body, mind, sense, organs. We come into this birth, we don't come in with self-knowledge. You know, you become a mumuksha, you become somebody who wants to gain self-knowledge, but until you gain self-knowledge, you're still living in duality. And duality means you're subject to a world of constant change. And you're subject to an self-experience of constant change, and you're subject to seeking yourself. You're seeking your well-being. You're seeking fullness. You're seeking happiness, and you're trying to get away from dukkha. We go towards sukha, toward happiness, toward well-being, and we run away from dukkha. Everybody in the world does it. All the living beings do it also. All the animals do it also. They go towards sukha and away from dukkha. They go toward pleasure and away from pain. You know? And we do that by manipulating the world, you know, to try to get the most sukha out of the world that we possibly can, to find some sort of stable place. So that's what we come with. And when we expose ourselves to knowledge, you know, that knowledge has to burn through layers upon layers and layers of a habitual responses to the world that are all based in ajnanam. Lifetimes and lifetimes of relationship to the world that is based in self-ignorance. And so nididhyasana is considered so important. Nididhyasana happens all the time. You don't have to just be sitting in meditation. But nididhyasana it can happen throughout the day continually. Every time you bring your mind back to the reality of your own being, which is absolutely present, into the reality of this creation as Ishvara every time you bring your mind back to that vision. That's Nityadhyasana. We can also do it when we're just sitting quietly, where I just absorb my whole mind completely just into myself, which Gaudapada is more or less talking about right now, because he's viewing in his whole presentation, it's really from the standpoint of the jiva, of this individual. And so he's looking at this whole maya that we're experiencing right now with your sense organs open. Right now that your sense organs are open, you see this world, you see this physical body, you're aware of the sense organs themselves, the mind is awake. And so this is you're totally engaged in the experience of maya at this time, and the experience of duality. Right? And so what he says is that his emphasis is this, that this maya that you're experiencing, this world of duality, is actually mithya. The whole thing is mithya. Now, this mithya, this term that we've used for years, but I'm just going to say real quickly again, in case some of you aren't really clear on this. When you say that something is mithya, it's a technical term. It means that that thing, whatever it is, has no independent being of its own. That it totally depends upon something else for its being. And if I were to pull that something else away, this mithya, maya that we're experiencing would not be there. Like, for instance, a common example, if I mistake a rope for a snake, the snake has no being, zero, without the rope. The bends of the rope are the bends of the snake. The length of the rope is the length of the snake. If I pull the rope away, the snake is pulled away. The snake doesn't exist actually. But then there it is. So that's why yama iti maya. That which is not, that is maya. There it is, but it doesn't have any being of its own. That's what we mean. When something, the order of reality of something that is like that is what we call mithya. And so when we say that this whole creation is maya, the whole, what is responsible for this projection of kalpita, this projection of duality, when we say the whole thing is only mithya, that means it is nothing, zero, nothing other than its adhishtana. The adhishtana is another technical word. The adhishtana, because mithya will have an adhishtana. The adhishtana is what is actually there. Right, so for the snake rope is the adhishtana. For clay pot, the pot is the mithya, it's mithya, that order of reality. Its adhishtana is the clay. And so here in Advaita, in the whole vision of the Upanishad, if we say all of this duality, everything that exists within duality is maya, and being maya, it by its order of reality is what we call mithya. But if you use this word mithya, it must, to use the word, it must have an adhishtana. You can't say something is mithya. You can't use that word unless it has an adhishtana. And here, the adhishtana is me, is consciousness, is conscious being. Conscious being is the adhishtana of all mithya, of the entire maya. So what that means from now, Gaudapada, who's doing this whole unfoldment, from the standpoint of me, from my experience. He's not really dealing with the jiva and Ishvara. He could, but that's not what he's doing. He's dealing with me, my personal experience, and saying, this self is the adhishtana of the entirety of my experience. So the entirety of my experience, meaning whatever I perceive, maya. Physical body, maya. Maya means it exists within duality. It's part of this projection. It comes into being and goes out of being. It's subject to change, so maya. Okay. This body, these sense organs, my mind, my thoughts, my moods, my emotions, the ahankara, the I notion, anything that I'm aware of, maya. Maya is mitya. Okay. If I say maya is mitya, this maya that we're experiencing is mitya, that means that just like the clay pot, all of this is like the pot, and I'm like the clay. That means this has no being at all apart from me. And so what does he say? To get over this habitual identification with yourself as the deha, the body, mind, sense organs, we just have to withdraw this maya for a little while. Just keep withdrawing it into the adhishtana, which is yourself. It's like saying to the clay pot, oh pot, you know, relax. Just withdraw yourself into the clay. Just spend a little time just being clay. Just be the clay. So now we're saying, Gaudapada is saying, we're going to do a little nididhyasana. Just withdraw your experience into your being. Because your being is what is actually here. All of your experiences can be withdrawn. They're not necessary. And it's as just like, in this way, this is kind of outrageous, but it's really true. If I close my eyes, just a simple act of closing my eyes, in that simple act, there are no forms are being experienced. Now I'm experiencing all of you. If I close my eyes, all of a sudden, all of these experiences are gone. You know? And so if I withdraw, I can withdraw my sense organs, and in the withdrawal of the sense organs, their field of experience is withdrawn. Right? And so if I withdraw my sense organs into my mind, say, so to speak, and then I quieten the mind, all of the experiences that the mind and sense organs have to offer, right, they're not offering and they're not doing it anymore. And so that world doesn't exist. And then what if the mind itself is withdrawn into the clay? You know, just into my being. Then the mind also, with its forms and whatever it has to offer, are also not present. And so that at that time, it's what we call nirvikalpa, nirvikalpa samadhi. I'm just simply me, that's all. And that's how I get to know myself. Because then, when my mind comes back out again, because it's a satya-mitya relationship, it comes back out, the world comes back out, but nothing has happened to me because I'm the self of the whole experience. So what is actually here, when I am the one who is actually here, when I withdraw all these names and forms, what is left is only me, the one who is actually here. Now all the names and forms come back. What is left? Where did I go anywhere? No. I'm here just like I was before. But now I recognize it. Now I recognize, gee, my being is not dependent upon name and form at all. With name and form, I'm here. Without name and form, I'm here. With name and form has not changed me. The absence of name and form has not changed me. And so that recognition, that being able to spend that time in nididhyasana is valuable because I'm giving my mind a chance just to be with me. So that I'm breaking some of the ajnanam-based habitual falling into that jivatvam, falling into that duality. So that whether my eyes are open or closed, it makes no difference. It's not that I become less when my eyes are open or become more when my eyes are closed. Which is a little different than what we usually think. We usually think that if we're thinking about nididhyasana, then I should be having some firework experiences when my eyes are closed, when I've withdrawn everything. But actually, those are just vrittis. And so now, there's just different levels of thought modification. So what he's doing now in this verse is he's talking now about what we call pratibandhakas, some obstructions that can come in your meditation that can cause your mind not to be able to just resolve into your own presence. So these are four obstructions that we often just talk, that he just lays out clearly, and they're kind of well known in the whole Vedanta Sampradaya, but he does it so well here. Maybe it even originated with him, I don't know. But it becomes something that we just know these four by themselves, but here they are. So these are called the pratibandhakas to contemplation, to meditation. So the first one is called laya. Laya means when your mind, say you go to sit in meditation and you start falling asleep. You find yourself tired, you find yourself wanting to fall asleep. And Swamiji says that there always will be kind of a foreshadowing of that. You feel yourself tired, you feel yourself wanting to sleep. You know, another thing around this, they say, don't meditate when you're laying down. Because if you meditate when you're laying down, your body that's laying down, it thinks, oh, it's time to go to sleep. You should be sitting up when you're meditating. And if you feel yourself wanting to sleep, then you should get up or go walk, take a shower, go do something else for a while, so that your mind doesn't get into that habit of when you sit in this meditative sthana place, that means go to sleep. Meditation is not sleep, you know. In sleep, your mind actually goes into an avyakta, into a causal condition for the mind. In meditation, your mind is awake. And the Atma is always awake. It's changelessly awake. It's not asleep. There's a big difference between sleep and contemplation. So if the mind is tired, you have to wake it up. And if you're too tired to meditate, then don't meditate at that time. So he says, laye, when the mind is in laya, wanting to sleep like that, sambodhiyate, chittam sambodhiyate, wake it up. One should wake up the mind when it goes into that kind of sleepy state. So don't continue your meditation. Stand up, do something. You know. So that's one, laya, that wanting to fall asleep. So laye sambodhiyate chittam. One should wake up the mind when it's starting to sleep. Vikshiptam shamiye punaha. Vikshepa is the next one. And he's brought this up earlier. I'm just putting the four together. The vikshepa is my mind running off to thinking about this and thinking about that and wanting this and wanting that. The vikshepa has a lot to do with kama, with desire. Desires are multifarious. There's so many different types of desires. They can be desires about how you should have been treated when you were young. You know? Like, I wish this hadn't happened to us. This should not have been done to my family. I should not have been treated like this. That's a desire. It's in the negative. I should not have been treated like this means I should have been treated like this. I wanted to be treated like this. I was not. I was treated like this. Right? So there's a desire. That's a raga. And so it can be very legitimate. Yeah, you should. You can say it's a little child. You can say, yes, you should have been treated like that. I know. Now come back. Be able to bring your mind back from these desires or in the present. You know, I need to get that raise. I need to make more money. And then it can go on, yeah, but that other person is getting the raise. Why shouldn't I get the raise? Whatever it is, it's all kama. Kama means desire. It's all based on kama. I need this artha. I need this type of security. I need these types of pleasures. You know, I need my mind to be a particular way. Why is my mind like this and not like that? You know? All of this type of thinking, it's too much thinking. I obviously don't think so much. Too much thinking, you know. You have to bring your mind back. You're trying to meditate. Vikshepa, when you're trying to contemplate, vikshepa is what's is the mind is always being, it becomes dispersed out into the world. Now, one wanting this and wanting that in positive and negative ways. If you see where your mind's going, you just say, "What's the desire there?" It's interesting, you know. What am I really wanting? Why is my mind being pulled out there? What's the desire behind it? You know. One thing, though, I think Swamiji, who's really had made some tremendous, given a lot of clarity to Nididhyasana. It's one, I think, one of his major contributions, in fact, to the whole Sampradaya, is really expanding upon Nididhyasana. One thing he has said, and actually I always teach this also because I feel it so works. When you sit down to meditate, the mind is thinking about a lot of things, usually, you know. It has this on its mind and that on its mind and things it has to do today or things it's already done. And so it's nice to just, when you first sit, to just be quiet for a while. Quiet means give the mind some time out. To just let it think about its things for a while, you know. So it releases the pressure. And then after it's kind of gone through its laundry list, and you kind of allow it to think about the things it needs to think, where there's some pressure there, you let it think about these things. Give it some time. And then you can start pulling the mind in with much, much less pressure. It appreciates that space, you know. And even things like, it's all like precursors to meditation, really. Like even asking the mind, is there anything on your mind, anything you're worried about? The buddhi can ask the manas. Is there anything, any concerns, anything you want me to know, anything you want to be taken care of? You just ask and it will tell you. You asked, it'll tell you. And that also gives some space. You're just kind of creating some space by doing that. And so that doing that at the very beginning takes some of the pressure off when you're trying to just pull your mind to stop that vikshepa. That samyate, it says that shama is, you know, of these in the qualifications for the adhikari, shama is the first qualification. Shama, dhamma, upadityatiksha, there's all these qualifications. What shama means is that you have some control over your mind. You know, if you don't want to go in a certain, the mind to go in a certain way or to get involved in a certain type of thinking, you can just dismiss it. That's a nice quality to have. Because often the mind will be going its way, you know, but then something will happen and it'll get trapped. And you don't have any control over it. It becomes like an embodied thought or an embodied emotion. You can't let it go on its way. So shama is your really ability to reject whatever thoughts you don't want to engage with, or whatever emotions you don't want to engage with. Maybe you don't choose to engage with that emotion. You have a choice. Dhamma only comes in when you don't have the choice, because the emotion or whatever, the reaction has already got you. Shama has failed. Yeah? The emotion has become totally embodied. And so in that case, you know, you have to be able to contain your reaction so that you don't act out. So shama is a wonderful quality to have. It's say you want to, in contemplation, you want to help that a little, you know, by giving the mind some time, you know, giving it permission to work on a few things before you decide to contemplate. But once you decide it's time to contemplate, then when the mind goes out wanting this or wanting to do that, you bring it back. That act of bringing it back is meditation. That is meditation, to bring it back to yourself. When it's out one wandering around, that's just the normal samsara. It's not meditating at that time. You're bringing it back to yourself. That's meditation. So that shamayate means this vikshepa, when the mind's dispersing all over the place, that act of bringing it back is meditation. Right? So it's a, he says, first, if it's starting to sleep, wake it up. Okay? Don't meditate. Wake your mind up. Then when it's dispersing all over the place, running after this, running after, just simply bring it back. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing to be angry about with that. Oh, my mind's thinking. The mind thinks. It has lots to do. It has lots to think about. And so you just learn how to pull it back. So they get used to that. It's training. So that the mind gains that strength to just come back. So that's called, so that's the second obstruction is vikshepa. So we have laya, falling asleep, vikshepa. Then sakashayam, vijaniyat. Say you're awake, not sleeping. Your mind is now quiet. It's not running all over the place. But you're not asleep. The mind is quiet, but it's dull. You know, there's some pressure there. You know, there's some pressure that's called kashaya. This is the area now, and Swamiji also discovered, especially as he became more understanding of psychology, this is exactly where we want to do inner child work or have some sort of dialogue with the unconscious. Because the kashaya is unconscious material. In fact, they have talked about it just kind of the ancient way of dealing with it. Kashaya is, or the way to be with it is to, you just sit quietly in that kind of dullness or in that type of vibratory field that is not very pleasing, you know. And you just let the thoughts ripple up, like bubbles from the underground. You just let them ripple up and go. You have a vairagya, dispassion toward them. You let them just come up and go. That's how they used to deal with them. Which is fine. But you can also, and maybe it's a little bit more powerful, is to actually, when that kind of dullness is there, is to actually address it. Say, does anybody inside, and somehow we do the meditation like this, does anybody inside have anything to say? You know, does anybody want to tell me anything? Well, you're addressing your unconscious. And a lot of times they'll raise their hand. I have something I want to say. And you'd be very surprised sometimes of what the little, I call them little ones inside, are thinking. And so you learn how to have a dialogue with that unconscious material. And so all Gaudapada says at this place about kashayam vijaniyat, recognize there's some unconscious material there. You know? And we're saying now, just really from Jung and psychology and what we've discovered, is going into an inner dialogue, just addressing it, that unconscious, you can come into relationship with that unconscious material. And that will get rid of this dull force field, impenetrable force field that makes you sit in a dull silence. You know, like my mind's quiet, there's no vikshepa, it's not running around anywhere, I'm not asleep, and this is really boring. Because there's no wholeness or fullness there at all. It's an active unconscious. And so learning how to deal with these kashayas is something really beautiful and something that we, especially in modern days, we have to know how to do this. And so inner child work is of one form or another. There's many different forms of going in and having a relationship with the unconscious, but learning those things is really valuable. So that's kashaya and vijaniyat. And then he says, so the fourth thing, well, not exactly, this is, now, samapraptam nachaliyet. He says, samapraptam, when the mind, so say the kashaya that has opened up, the vikshepa is not there, there's no sleep, and then there's the attainment of this samatvam. It means a peace, a silence. So the mind is going in that direction, in the direction of silence or shanti. He says, at that time, nachali, don't disturb it. Don't do anything. You just be with that and let the mind go into that. Sama means that state of equipoise, of equilibrium. Because these other things have been mastered, so to speak. Now it goes into that state of quietude. At that time, don't do anything. Let it continue. So nichalayate means don't disturb it. Chal means to move. Chal, the chalaya, is a causal. Don't make it move. don't try to bring it out or change it. Let it continue on in that direction. Nichalayate. So let's at least start this next one so we can do the fourth one. Na swadiyet sukham tatra. Nisangat pragnaya pavet. Nischalam nischarat chittam. Eki kuryat priyatnataha. Eki kuryat priyatnataha. Na aswadiyet sukham tatra. Nisangaha pragnaya pavet. Nischalam nischarat chittam. Eki kuryat priyatnataha. He says, now, okay, the mind is going, gaining that shanti, that quiet. And as it gains that quiet, it experiences peace or bliss or ananda or sukham. The mind becomes happy. So it says, naswadiyet sukham. There, don't taste that sukham. Don't focus on, don't enjoy that pleasure. Don't get lost there. Because what's happening is now the mind is becoming very quiet. And so now you start focusing on the quiet mind. Now your focus is on the vritti, the quiet vritti, the sukha that wasn't there before, right? That sukha wasn't there before. Since it wasn't there before, that sukha is something that's generated by a vritti, a thought modification. Thought modification means maya. Right? Thought modification means you're in dvaita, you're in duality, because that sukha, that pleasure, can be there or not be there. And so that's not what you want. So he says there, don't find your mind turning toward that sukha and enjoying it. Right? Aswada means to taste. Don't taste it. Don't enjoy that. Don't focus on that. Na aswadiyet sukham. He says that there, in that vritti, don't focus on the sukha. Leave it alone. Nissangaha prajnaya bhavet. How to do that? Because you become nissangaha. Have detachment from that. Gain some detachment. Nissangaha. Don't hang on to that. How should I not hang on to that? It's sukha, after all. Prajnaya. Prajnaya, through your knowledge, because of your knowledge, because of your viveka, you don't want to hang on to that because it's mithya, it's maya. That's not what you're looking for. You might as well be a samsari. Let me fulfill this desire so I can have some sukha. You know, let me gain this type of a mental state so I can have sukha, pleasure. Mental state is maya. That's mithya. But the instant it's a mental state, what you have to know about mental states is they come and go. So now say you're attached to this mental state. This is moksha. This mental state is moksha. This mental state is nothing but a mental state. Mental states come and go. So if you think, just like it's absolute samsara, you know, I am working for continuous mental states. Swamiji would go like this, that will make you mental. It will make you mental to continually work for mental states. Mental states by their very nature are continually changing. The thing is, it's not that there's anything wrong with a positive mental state. But that's not moksha. You know, that's not what we're looking for. There's nothing wrong in it. I'd like to have lots of positive mental states. But that's not the point. If you think that's the self, that's the problem. And that's where, I think in the Vedanta, that's where we get into a lot of trouble. You think that getting a positive mental state, and then a more positive one, and a more positive one, and the supremely positive mental state is moksha. And then you say, well, you know, that myself is, I know that myself is there, but it's not expressing right now. When will I be able to always have, you know, when will I be always able to see myself? This is the question comes all the time. You know, I know myself is there, but when will I always be able to enjoy myself? Means when will I always be able to have a sukhavritti? Right? Yourself is never not here. Yourself, the ananda, the satchit ananda of your being, is not covered by mental state. Even a big depressed one, which is not a very happy thing, but a mental state is not covering your being. But viveka is necessary here. Otherwise, we're working for mental states. You can do that, but you have to know what you're doing. You're a yogi then, or you're working to have a mind which is capable of creating mental states. I gain the strength to create positive mental states. And then you can say, yes, I've worked very hard at it, and I can create and hold a positive mental state for a long period of time. And that's like a strength that I have, and I've worked hard for it. I've done a lot of tapas to be able to hold these mental states for a long period of time. And that's fine. You can actually do these things like that, like the Ashtanga Yoga. The whole Ashtanga Yoga tradition is geared toward being able to get the mind into such a degree of control that it can do this, what they call it, the very second, third sutra, I think it is, Chitta Vritti Nirodha. I can actually bring all of the vrittis, the thought modifications of my mind, into a standstill, and I can hold that. I can't hold it forever, but I can hold it. I can resolve all of those vrittis. And I try to get myself into a condition where those vrittis remain resolved. But we're talking about trying to resolve maya, you know. That's what Gaudapada said just a few verses ago. He said, it is actually like this work, it's actually like taking a little kusha, the little blade of kusha grass, tip, just from the tip, and trying to empty the ocean with it. That's what that is like. And he says, you go ahead and do that with great enthusiasm. Just do it, you know. And that's what trying to control the mind is like that. You do it with enthusiasm, and you know what? Bhagavan will come along and bless you by giving you a teacher. because with that great effort that you've made, and with that enthusiasm of really wanting to know, Bhagavan will take care of the problem by giving you the proper upayas, the proper means to take care of your mind. There is a way to take care of your mind, but it doesn't have to do with controlling the mind like that. It has to do with knowledge, which allows the mind to recognize the source of the ananda, the source of well-being that it had thought existed out here or even in the form of a vritti. But how to relieve the mind of its problem is to let it discover the very source of the ananda to be its very being. And the source of that ananda can never change, never come and go. It's timeless. And it's never away from the mind. Once the mind discovers that, this is, okay, whatever the thought is, it doesn't make any difference because I'm always there. Whatever the thought is, whatever the world is doing, it's fine because my being, the wholeness, the ananda, which I was trying to find out of the world, is my very self. The mind discovers that. And then it enjoys a certain type of leisure because it doesn't have to do anything anymore. There's not nowhere to go. It doesn't have to go anywhere to discover Ananda, and it doesn't have to hang on to the Ananda that it was that it discovered, because the Ananda that it discovered is timeless. And it's the Adhishtana of the whole creation. So there is no getting around, then getting away from it, so it can relax. But until that time, you are only trying to generate sukhavrittis. The whole life is generating sukhavrittis. And now in your search for moksha, you're meditating, trying to again generate a sukhavritti and then become attached to the sukhavritti. See what I mean? So you're just attached to the sukhavritti, and he's saying, don't do that. That's not it. It's not the sukhavritti. Let that go. Just let it go. And then we'll see in this next, I'll do this next week. Let the mind continue in its direction to resolve into the very nature of your being. So that's the next line. So we'll do that next week. Om Swasti Prajapya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Bhyashubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parajanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Barahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amatangamaya, Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. Our next class will be on the 24th, a Saturday, and then 25th, a Sunday. So that's why I'll be back.
We won't have the 22nd.
I think I'll be too tired. With the jet lag. Yeah.
This.
Olga.
When mind is relaxed into reality, this is a volitional movement.
On the part of the mind?
On the part of the mind. How does the transition happen? Because at some point, the will should resolve as well.
Mm. How they explain that and is that it's volitional up until what we call savikalpa samadhi. That means where the mind is still present, but it's withdrawn from any type of objectification and is just now focused with that gentle focus on its own content. But the mind is still present. It's just that its content is only the self. But the mind, the mindness of the mind is there. So there's an as though duality because the mind is present. But when that state is held for moments or whatever, the nature of the self will overwhelm. a mind. So at that time, even though the mind is there in what they call an ati sukshma vritti, very subtle, it's totally overwhelmed by the nature of the self, so you don't recognize its presence. And the example they use for that is, it's like if I were to hold a candle flame up to the sun, you know, maybe initially you'd be able to discern the edge, right, the edge of the flame. But if you just held it there for a moment, the force of the sun itself would probably overwhelm the edge of the flame, and you would just be left with the experience of the only of the self of the sun. Makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so there is, you're right, there's no volition. You can't really go have volition to go from
mm-hmm.
Maya to just
mm-hmm.
the total as the resolution of that. And Gaudapada deals with this in a really interesting way, because actually if you think of the relationship between what is Maya, Mitya, and the Adhishtana, the Mitya has no being, other being than the Adhishtana. And so this creation, even from, he's not talking about Ishwara at all, so he's only talking about what you can do as a jiva. Right? And so what you're doing is just resolving the Maya into your being, and Maya has no being of its own. So you're just pulling it back, you know, in Nididhyasana. He's kind of talking of it like that, which is a little different way of talking about it, because he doesn't deal much with Ishwara.
So is it your goal to have that process to take place, or?
Well, you have to be careful about this. Nididhyasana is very, very helpful, you know. But what people will think also that I think is problematic, you know, can be problematic, is that you only think of contemplation as sitting in meditation and withdrawing your mind, whereas for somebody, once you know yourself, you are the nirvikalpa. Mitya is not disturbing the nirvikalpa you, right? It's not really a disturbance. And so you would say, even now as you're walking along, a moment of, like when Swamiji says, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's true, he says, oh, I relax between thoughts, I'm with myself between thoughts. All that means, though, is your mind can be engaged in this way or that way, nothing's happening to yourself. Yourself is its own light, its own, your own being is changeless. Doesn't matter what your mind is doing, but when your mind's not really engaged in anything, what is it doing? It's just coming home. Because there's no ajnanam there. So it's either engaged in this or that or the other thing, or it's just resting with you. But actually, that can be misleading, because there's never a time when it's not resting in you.
Yeah, so you don't need a process, or there isn't really a transition, kind of.
You don't, once, as you become comfortable with yourself, there is no time when you're not meditating, really. On the other hand, there's nothing wrong with meditating, and it's also very helpful to get your mind used to you, because your mind is only used to taking itself to be you, not recognizing you in your own right. It's all that, what we call that mutual superimposition, is what's normally happening. It's you're just assuming you are this body, mind, sense organs, because that's how it's always been. But now you start to recognize that actually yourself is absolutely changeless and not contained at all. Nothing's changing or hurting you in any way. And no matter what the thought or the experience is, the thoughts and experiences can be whatever they are. And there's a whole gamut of experiences that the creation can give to us and our own mind can give to us. But those experiences, I'm there exactly the same way for all those experiences. And then, in fact, I become a refuge for the mind. Like if the mind gets lost in samsara, or is getting lost in some pain, or some inner child stuff, or whatever it is, I am its refuge. I am the one that the buddhi will just bring it all back to me. You know? And your nature is so kind, really. It's so non-critical, so accepting, so whole and complete. You are your best friend. There's no better friend than your being, the being that you are. It is the gentle smile that you see in all the devatas, all the murtis. You know how they have their eyes are so gently closed and it's a beautiful half smile? That is an expression, you know, like an image of your being. Your being doesn't have any form. But what it is, that's a beautiful expression of you, of who you are. And so when you, as you know yourself, when you bring your mind, you're bringing your mind back, or your hurts back, or you know, your anger back, or your agitation back, you're bringing it back to that one who is abhayam, absolutely, you know, free of any harm.
So there is a transition. It's not for you, for me, it's for the mind and who it takes itself to be.
Yeah, there's a transition.
So, and that starts off maybe just a little tiny moments of Nididhyasana or something, or of Nirvikalpa Samadhi or Sarvikalpa Samadhi. You know, some kind of sense of knowing who I am, and then it kind of gets more and more and more. Right, it doesn't do that. You know who you are, and then you're like Swamiji, where you're always meditating.
Well,
between your thoughts.
I would say it a little differently than that. I don't know. There's so many different ways of talking about this, but say once you know who you are, really, yourself doesn't have any parts, right? So when you know, you know, but it takes time for the mind to behave instead of behaving in these kind of habitual ajnana-based ways, which then the buddhi will keep pulling the mind back home, right, to the self that is there. But even though yourself is there and you know yourself, the mind still behaves as though it's ignorant. But yourself is not there, and it is known. Okay, but the mind has all these habitual thought patterns and emotional responses. So for some time, you know, your mind has to be brought back home, you know, and say you have this you have a reaction, but now that reaction is taking place in you who have knowledge. Mm. And so these type of things are slowly drop off. Mm. They don't all drop off right away. But that doesn't mean that you don't know yourself. That's why we say you can call it pratibandhika jnanam. Knowledge without obstacles. That's a term that we use the term, but in a way it's not a fair term, because it's like saying, I know myself, but I don't know myself. Well, that's not really true. You do know yourself, but your mind, there's an emotional lag time before every part of your mind and all of your unconscious and all of that owns up your knowledge. Your buddhi has knowledge, yourself is differentiated, you know, but it takes time for the mind to grow into what you know. And I'm not talking about partially knowing. There's all these partial knowing also, or incorrect knowing. Mithya jnanams, incorrect, big incorrect knowing, you think you know but you don't, is where you take a shantavritti to be yourself. Mm-hmm. And then when the shantavritti is not there, then you know that yourself is there, but it's covered now. Mm-hmm. That's how you feel. Myself is covered. So when will myself not be covered? I know I'm here, but when will it not be covered? That's because the only reason you think that is because you still think that you're a shantavritti. And your shantavritti is not always there. That's not true, though. You're not a shantavritti. The mind has shantavrittis. Yourself is the one that's illumining the shantavritti and the ashanti, and the agitated vritti, and the depressed vritti, and the angry vritti, and the joyous vritti. So the viveka is to recognize the one who's ever present. And then you can have problems saying, well, I know myself, but why doesn't my mind act like it? You know, it's not a, I know myself. And I mean, now, I mean, you really do know who you are, your being. You do really do recognize the one who's ever present. But then you say, why does my mind keep acting like it does? Why isn't it more saintly? Or whatever. Well, because that takes time. There's an emotional lag time, you know.
When you're experiencing those things, those pratibandhikas, and you have knowledge, that experience, during the middle of that experience, it seems like you wouldn't know. It would be similar to someone who doesn't have knowledge.
No, not really.
Except afterwards, then you come back.
No.
No?
No.
So in the middle of being pissed off or whatever.
Yeah. See, you're making that same mistake of the Shantavritti mistake. All you need is viveka, because if the viveka is there, the self is there as you are, and the emotions are there as they are. You know.
And that's all, but that's true even with in ignorance.
Totally.
The self is there all the time.
All the time. But here the difference is there's a viveka. There's knowledge and viveka. Between the activities of your mind and the very self of the mind, that viveka is there.
But doesn't the mind kind of get caught up in things and then forget? Almost, it's not like the viveka never happened, but isn't the nature of a pratibandhika experience that the mind is caught up in it?
That's true. It is caught up and it's going with it, but your self is still present. Okay, to get more into this, which I'm going to do just a little bit now, is this. When there's a difference between, this is palavyapti and vrittivyapti, there is a difference between gaining knowledge of this painting. See, I'd never seen the painting before, right? This painting here. I've never seen it before. I gain knowledge of the painting. My eyes give me a vritti, my mind, a thought modification of that painting, right? And so now, as long as I'm looking at the painting, I have the experience of it. But if I'm over here doing this work and that work, I'm not having an experience of the painting. I can keep thinking of the painting to bring the painting experience back in memory. Like, think of the painting, I'm doing this, think of the painting, think of the painting, think of the painting. Then let me meditate and look at the painting. Okay? Now I'm carrying on in the world, think of the painting, think of the painting, think of the painting. Okay, that's how we think about knowledge. And so say I really want the painting, you know, to pervade my life, I have to keep bringing it back. But self-knowledge is different than that. Self-knowledge is not of something other than me. So once the ajnanam, the self-ignorance, is removed, I don't have to think of the self. Because the self is already ever-present and always has been ever-present.
Then why do you use the term you bring the mind back? When you were talking about pratibandhika, you know,
well,
you're saying bring the mind back.
What I'm talking about is that because of habitual behavior, unconscious habitual behavior, ajnanam-based behavior.
But what I'm saying is, if you're not bringing your mind back, why would you use that term?
Well, let me finish what I'm saying.
I'm sorry.
Okay. When I'm talking about bringing the mind back, it is behaving and reacting in a way that is not true to my knowledge. Right? And so all I have to do is bring my knowledge into that behavior.
Which implies that the knowledge wasn't there. If you have to bring the knowledge in, then there's, during those moments, the mind is acting as if it didn't have knowledge. And so what I'm saying is the experience of it. What the mind is experiencing is not knowledge in those moments. It's whatever it's caught up in. And that seems awfully similar to ignorance to me. I know that it isn't similar, but it seems like the experience from the mind's perspective would be similar. I know that it can, once that it's no longer caught up in the Pratibandhika, then the viveka is there, clearly. And it's just not accessible, or it's not being done, maybe is the word, in the middle of the Pratibandhika.
How do I explain this? The self, you have to come at this from different angles. First of all, the mind is addicted to sukhavrittis. Okay. I am not a sukhavritti. The wholeness of yourself is not a sukhavritti. It is not talking. It's not telling the mind, don't do this or do this. It's simply like the sun, kind of illumining everything. It has its own being, my own being. And it's illumining everything, and it's constant. Okay. Now, the constancy of my being is something that is very stable. Okay. And, okay, like this. These are actually examples that are being used. I'm just trying to pull it together and keep my mind going here. Until you have knowledge, your constant is this body. You are this body. You can be driving along and doing this and that, but your sense of being is really located in this body. You know? What you find, what you discover, is that the sense of being, the me, that you had taken to be this body, is not, is free and independent, and never not there. That freedom of, that ever-present nature of yourself was there before, but totally superimposed onto this body. Now that ever-present nature of yourself is not superimposed on the body. It's not superimposed on the mind either. The shining, self-evident awareness that you are is always the same. And that knowledge has, the self-knowledge has released your presence from that ajnanam that had totally identified you with this body, I'll say body-mind complex. Now, that problem, that is not there. And it's just never there. At the same time, just like you can be, before when you were had self-ignorance, you're walking around doing this and thinking about that and thinking about that. Your mind is engaged in this and that and the other thing. And maybe having this reaction or that reaction, right? But it's still all taking place in you. But you is this body. Now that you is not, it's free. That ajnanam is gone. But then there are ways of behaving in the world that are so conditioned that you have to bring your mind back. So I know the point you're making. It has some validity to it, but it's not completely correct.
When you what you just said, yeah. You have to bring the mind back. That
yeah, you're very literal. Let me just, I've got to
well, precise. Yeah. Literal is kind of a put down, but I want to really get to the heart of it. And it seems like bringing the mind back doesn't mean that there's anyonya adhyasa that you recover from. It means that you just calm the mind down or something, right? Is that closer? It sounds like what you're saying is that once you have knowledge, anyonya adhyasa is gone, even if you're in the middle of a pratibandhika.
Not exactly.
That's what I thought I heard.
What?
That's what I thought I heard.
I'll have to think about it.
Okay.
I know what you're doing. I'm not sure quite how to make it clear. And there's some subtle things there. Also, Ishvara comes into it, the jiva's relationship with Ishvara.
question about that.
See, the thing is, there's just one real quick thing. This is why there's multi-levels here. It is one thing to recognize, to really recognize your own being, right? This, who you are, the changeless nature of your being. Now, it's another level. You know, you've recognized, from your standpoint, the Atma. Your Atma as being something that is absolutely stable and changeless in every experience that you have. And that becomes something that is you, because that Ajnanam has been broken, okay? Which is different. You don't go away. Like the painting goes away, you don't have to remember it, because what it caused you to take yourself to be this is not there anymore, and you're ever-present. And so that ever-present nature, self-recognition, is abiding, okay? But now we have another problem of, as though another problem. This body, mind, sense organs, the whole jiva, the ahankara, the I notion, all of that, the I notion is now changing because you've recognized yourself, and so the I is landing on you. But this body, mind, sense organs is used to relating to the world, right? That subject object, it's used to relating to the world, to using the world to gain its happiness. Yeah. So the vairagya is not complete. And that's the, those are the type of paribandhikas, but it's not that you don't know yourself. But then in terms of the relationship between jiva and Ishwara and all of that, is there, but it's not, there's an emotional lag time. And so that, I don't know. I'm getting too tired and lost now. We can go, we can work on it, but you work on it and I'll work on it, try to make it more clear. It's a subtle thing, because I just can't bring myself to say that once yourself is known, it's not known. Because it doesn't require the mind for it to be known. That's another thing to understand. Consciousness, the mind is known because of consciousness. Consciousness is not known because of the mind. It is its own experience. And once the ignorance has been taken, that abiding presence of yourself is just, it's just never not there, no matter what is going on in the mind. That viveka has already taken place. But the mind still has this kind of habitual ignorance-born behavior that takes a while for it to drop off. But there's a lot to gaining knowledge in terms of the knowledge really fully is I am Ishwara. Yeah. And so to really, for that part, to really become clear, you know, and once that really becomes whole and complete, then there's absolutely no problem.
It's not the self that gains knowledge, though, is it? It's the mind that
it's
gains
the mind.
Knowledge.
It's the mind. But I'm talking about, so I'm talking right now about recognition of your own being.
Right.
Okay.
But the mind.
The mind has to recognize its own mityatva.
Right.
And differentiate itself from what is its own self. It has to differentiate the mitya from the self.
And it can do that. It can have a thought, you know, this is what the self is. But it's a thought generating machine. So it's not always generating that thought.
But but once the ignorance has been removed, it doesn't need that thought for you to be you.
Right.
Yeah. It's not necessary. It doesn't matter what the mind is thinking.
Right.
You're still there as you.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what the mind is feeling, you're still there as you. Because yourself is not dependent. The self-shining nature of you is not dependent upon the mind. Right? The mind is dependent upon the self, but the self's not dependent on the mind. So the self-experience is stable, and you remove that ignorance that had caused you to only be this mind. I don't know how to get that back once it's gone, no matter what the mind is doing. It's not dependent any longer upon the thoughts.
It seems to me that the mind can just have thoughts that are not about the self. And bringing it back phrase means that you're going from one thought back to a different thought, a thought of knowledge. A thought that happens to be about anything.
A thought about the painting. Yeah.
I can have a thought about the painting, and then I can have a thought about the self.
Yeah, but what about...
I don't usually have those two thoughts simultaneously.
As long as you understand...
Or the mind doesn't.
Yeah, but that's kind of interesting. Like the mind is going off on a spiel that's really based in ignorance, and you can bring that spiel back. The buddhi can bring that spiel back based upon knowledge. But all the while, if you have knowledge, well, the mind is on this ignorant spiel, and then the buddhi is bringing it back. Those are all vrittis, but none of them are covering yourself. I'm there as I am when the mind is doing its ignorant spiel, and I'm also there when the buddhi is bringing the mind back. Reeling the mind back into knowledge, but both are all vrittis.
Right.
But my self is not dependent on the vritti anymore because that ignominious, that's nice, that ignominious has been removed. We have to do wait.
Well, it's also,
I can't resolve it for you tonight. Good, thank you.
That process is also shared by many schools, like many practices. So you can have
the manas, process, yes.
Right,
yes.
Like the distraction, the manas, the buddhi can bring the mind back, but there's no self-knowledge. There's no.
They don't know
back,
if they're bringing the mind
right,
back, too.
It's only coming back to the buddhi.
Yeah.
It's not coming
back. Always only coming back to the buddhi.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas for Jnani, the self has been freed from that Ajnanam. It doesn't require the mind to say, it doesn't matter what the mind says anymore. Because the ignorance has been removed from yourself. So that breaks the bond, the anyonya, this mutual superimposition bond that was there before. It's not there anymore. And the mind is still behaving like it's ignorance, even though you're not.
Those experiences that get mistaken for the self, are they like a natural outcome of contemplation of the self or recognition?
Well, I think they're only in the sense that the mind becomes gains a shantavritti, you know,
yes.
And that shantavritti is taken to be yourself, mm-hmm. And then you lose the experience of yourself then. If you take yourself to be the shantavritti, then you lose the experience of yourself.
Mm.
That's also a common trap. Good. Let's stop. That was good.